Morning, ladies and gentlemen. First case is Pasha versus Gonzalez. Mr. Heron.
Good morning, Your Honors. I represent Kladiana Pasha, an Albanian national who applied for asylum in May of 2001. Her asylum application was denied by the immigration judge, who found that 4 of the 10 documents that she submitted were most likely false. She appealed to the Board of Immigration Appeals, which affirmed without opinion, and the present appeal followed. Now, Ms. Pasha has raised quite a few legal issues to this court, and what's remarkable about the government's response is that the government has not responded to any of them. Instead,
well, they've put their marbles in the exhaustion basket, so maybe you should address that.
Correct, Judge. And we have a response to the exhaustion argument, but I would like to focus first on our argument.
No,
on
you
the
ought
merits.
To focus first on the exhaustion issue.
Very well, Judge. The government contends that Ms. Pasha has failed to exhaust her administrative remedies because the brief that was submitted to the board in this case failed to contain a certificate of service. And accordingly, the board rejected that brief. Now, in fact, the notice of appeal that Ms. Pasha submitted did contain a general statement of her claim in this case.
Mr. Heron, is it possible for the board to reach issues that are not mentioned in a notice of appeal?
It certainly is possible, Your Honor.
In other words,
exhaustion.
Right. The board has de novo review. So if the board has a case before it, it can decide, in a sense, to waive exhaustion.
Yes, Judge. And in fact, what's interesting about this case is that there are two different ways that a board can dismiss a case. One is to affirm without opinion, and that's what the board did in this case, and that essentially means that they're adopting the decision of the immigration judge as the final administrative decision in this case.
Forgive me for interrupting you, but I thought that the BIA did not dismiss the appeal, but affirmed it.
Right.
And did so after striking the brief, and thus relied entirely on the notice of appeal. And
that
the notice
correct.
Of appeal, of course, gave very broad reasons for the appeal. Arguably, it could be, and I'd like to hear your take on it, including the evidentiary issues raised here.
Yes, Judge. The board affirmed without opinion and therefore relied on the notice of appeal. It could have dismissed the case outright, as you mentioned, if they had found that the reasons in the appeal were not sufficient. And the fact that they didn't do so indicates that they did find that the...
It just says the board may summarily dismiss your appeal if you don't file a brief. They do have this warning on the notice of appeal. You must clearly explain the specific facts and law on which you base your appeal. Which the lawyer, why isn't there an ineffective assistance argument here?
Your Honor, we researched the law concerning ineffective assistance, and it appeared that the majority of circuits that have considered this specific issue have found that the filing of a brief isn't sufficient and that very broad statements of the grounds for appeal are, in fact, sufficient to preserve petitioner's argument.
I don't understand you. You're not following me. This lawyer, by failing to file the failing to serve the brief, lost the case. Now, maybe it can be salvaged on some other ground, but I'm surprised you're not arguing that there was ineffective assistance by this lawyer in booting the appeal to the Board of Immigration Appeals.
The reason
and
that
giving
we didn't
the government, you know, its exhaustion argument.
The reason that we didn't take that approach, Your Honor, is that the board adopted the decision of the immigration judge who had specifically considered.
You're missing the whole point. If you lose on the exhaustion point, you're not so confident, are you, that the exhaustion might be you don't need an alternative ground, that even if you had a perfectly good alternative ground, it wasn't worth presenting?
If we lose on the exhaustion argument,
you're finished.
It would appear that there was ineffective assistance.
Well, then it's too late, right?
Well, my understanding of the case law is that it's quite clear that there is no failure to exhaust here, that Ms. Pasha has done everything
that's required of her. How can you say it's clear and forfeit an alternative ground, which might be a very good ground? I don't get it.
Did you look at the Lozada case?
The Lozada case from which circuit?
It's not a circuit. It's the BIA's Lozada decision.
Oh, yes, Judge, the
on the ineffectiveness of counsel. And I guess the question is, you know, usually people will say even if, because if you lose right now, it's not like you could come and file a 2255, as is the case with, say, criminal litigation. Now's the time.
What I could do is file a motion to reopen before
right.
the board,
the
which
board.
Would have been untimely at any point
right.
once this pro se petition for review is filed.
Right.
However, I think the exhaustion issue is really clear.
No, it's quite not really clear. Look, I have another question. What about has she filed for an adjustment of status based on her being married to an American?
Yes, Judge. She's married to a United States citizen, and that petition is pending. I've had some discussions with the government about whether they would be willing to remand this case to the immigration judge for consideration of that, and so far they've been unwilling to do that. I wanted to present the issue.
Well, are you aware of the board's Garcia decision?
Yes, Judge, I'm aware of that decision. And, again, I think that what would have to happen is that a motion to reopen would have to be filed. And I didn't want this court to lose jurisdiction because I think that it's important that this court consider the issue of the fraudulent.
Why would it be a matter of losing jurisdiction? As I understand the Garcia decision, these immigration judges, in the usual case, are supposed to delay action on removal until the adjustment of petition for adjustment of status has been adjudicated. Isn't that right?
That is correct. However, I think that if this matter were reopened, then there would no longer be a final administrative decision.
I forget to reopen it. Look, why isn't this removal issue adjudication stayed to await the determination on the adjustment of status? Because that would moot it, right?
That would moot it if it were successfully adjudicated.
Right. So why isn't if she's got two separate routes for avoiding removal, one the persecution issue and the other adjustment of status, why aren't they consolidated and presented in at one time to the Court of Appeals if the BIA rejects both of them?
The BIA hasn't rejected the adjustment of status yet. That actually is still pending and ongoing.
You're not listening to me. My point is, she has two possible grounds for avoiding removal. One is adjustment of status. The other is asylum. Now, why aren't they being presented to us together?
That's a procedural question, I think, concerning.
Well, that's the Garcia case suggests that the removal IJ is normally supposed to wait until the adjustment of status is denied before proceeding with the removal.
Well, I think that the issue here is that the adjustment of status was not filed until after the asylum case was adjudicated. So what happened was that the asylum case went up to the board. In the meantime, Ms. Pasha's husband became a United States citizen, filed an I-130 for Ms. Pasha, and that case started up. It's, in fact, just starting up right now. There's an interview on the I-130 petition set for later this month. I can't explain why those cases don't get consolidated earlier on or why there aren't better procedures, because I think that's an issue for the government, really, as to how they've drafted their own procedures.
So you're saying she didn't file or her husband didn't file the I-130 is filed by the... Is that filed by the husband?
Or yes.
So this wasn't filed until what? It was until the Board of Immigration Appeals had decided this case, or was pending before the board?
I believe it was filed at the point when it was pending before the board, which was before my involvement in this case. I took over the case after the petition for review to this court had actually been filed.
So her then lawyer didn't ask the board to stay its
decision
of the appeal pending, but it could have asked. right?
Yes, he could have. What he could have done is filed a motion to remand to the immigration judge, which he did not do.
Okay. Thank you.
I see that I'm into my rebuttal time. If I could save a minute or two for rebuttal.
Sure.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Herron. Mr. Potter?
May
so
please?
You've put all your marbles in. You also are gambling on your exhaustion point. You lose that, yeah, you have nothing left, right?
Your Honor, we don't believe we're gambling.
What's your gambling?
An applicator, a case that was came
out. This is ridiculous. This is like when we have two lawyers come up here, and each one says the statute of the contract is clear. One says absolutely clear for him. The other one says absolutely clear for him. No room for trust. So he says your exhaustion argument is so weak, he doesn't have to worry about an alternative ground. And you think your exhaustion argument is so strong that you don't need to discuss the merits of the case. You're both wrong.
Well, Your Honor, we believe that exhaustion does control this case.
But there are a couple of circuits that don't agree with you that have drawn a distinction between looking at what the board does, between a decision of the board to affirm, even if it's an affirmance without opinion, as you, I'm sure, are aware, the board's own regulations make an affirmance without opinion a merits determination. And on the other hand, the board, if it chooses to do so, may summarily dismiss an appeal, in which case the board is saying it doesn't belong here. We have decided we don't have jurisdiction. But, of course, we have an affirmance without opinion, and it seems to me this court ought to take some general guidance from the Supreme Court's recent per curiam opinion in Eberhard against United States, which once again draws the distinction between jurisdictional rules and rules as it describes them there for claims processing, where of course the rule should be followed, but if the rule isn't followed, the consequences are not so drastic.
Well, Your Honor, we think in this case it's clear that they failed to exhaust because...
No, but the only thing that's clear is that the board affirmed without opinion. They did file a notice of appeal. It's a vague notice of appeal. If you had some sort of rigid specificity requirement or if the board required the filing of a separate written brief, then that would be a different situation. But instead, there is a notice of appeal, and the board does decide the case on the merits, and the only issues they're trying to raise here are the issues that were before the board.
Well, Your Honor, these issues were not before the board.
Sure they were. The board didn't have the IJ's opinion?
They had the IJ's opinion, yes,
sure.
Your Honor, but then in every case...
No. Here you have the BIA ruling on the merits, and it was, you know, arguably they're reviewing something, and that had to be the issues that were raised before the IJ and in the notice of appeal.
And, Your Honor, the issues in the notice of appeal were these. The judge employed an incorrect standard in determining whether or not the respondent suffered past persecution and whether or not she will suffer future persecution if she returns to Albania.
No, we know what it said, but you know, too, that what the board's order says, which is what it always says in these things, the board affirms without opinion the results of the decision below. The decision below is, therefore, the final agency determination, C8 CFR 1003.1E4. So unless you think they can write that without ever taking a look at the board's decision or the IJ's decision, which would confirm some of our worst fears, but maybe that's not what they do. Maybe they actually read the decision before they write that crucial sentence.
Yes, but the petitioner also has a duty to point out issues that he or she believes are
meritorious. Yes, but that's where I get back to Eberhard. The petitioner certainly should do that. And if the board had issued an order saying, we find this notice of appeal to be too vague to comply with that responsibility, to me it would be the analogy to the government's insisting on time limits for Rule 33 motions or other kinds of compliance for these rules. And I doubt there's anything this court could do. It seems to me that's within the board's discretion with a notice of appeal that looks like this. On the other hand, this does alert the board to the fact that they're evidentiary decisions, and the board seems to have been content to look at the opinion and go forward. So why shouldn't we similarly, along the same lines that the Sixth Circuit and Hassan against Gonzalez took, and other courts?
Because to do that, Your Honor, would open this court up to essentially seeing numerous claims exactly like
this. No, it wouldn't. Because, look, see, if you look at your own warning with the exclamation mark, it says you must clearly explain the specific facts and law on which you base your appeal to the immigration judge's decision. The board may summarily dismiss your appeal if it cannot tell from the notice of appeal or any statement attached why you were appealing. So, in other words, what this is saying to a person is, look, if you have, you know, this vague notice of appeal that Pasha has, we may decide not to listen to your appeal, just dismiss it. Well, in this case, they didn't do that, right? There's an analogy here to, you know, on Supreme Court review of a state judgment. If the state, means the state might have a perfectly good procedural basis for dismissal of the case, but suppose it doesn't invoke its right to dismiss for procedural reasons, but goes on to decide the merits. Right? Then it's appealable, even though the court could have prevented an appeal by invoking a procedural ground. Isn't that what happened here? The board could have invoked a procedural ground. It didn't. And, of course, one consequence of what it did was, by affirming the immigration judge's opinion, it gives that opinion precedential significance. So maybe the board thought, you know, it's a great opinion by the immigration judge in dealing with the laser-created forms and so on, so it wants it to be a ruling on the merits, which is what it is when it's affirmed, right?
Well, a couple things, Your Honor. Immigration judges' decisions are not considered precedential.
No, but if they're affirmed, they're affirmed.
They're still not considered precedential by the board or by the immigration bar, unless comes out with an opinion.
Because if we affirm a district court opinion without an opinion, then that district court opinion would be cited. Obviously, you know, it's something we approved. I don't understand that.
You know, in this court, if we strike an opening brief and the appellant fails to correct the error and refile, we typically dismiss the appeal. We don't summarily affirm after reviewing the notice of appeal, for example. And it seems that, on the other hand, that the BIA is comfortable ruling on the merits with only the notice of appeal before it. You know, why shouldn't we assume that the BIA considered the evidentiary argument that Ms. Pasha makes here? Her notice of appeal identified evidentiary issues, and her arguments before the IJ specifically challenged the expert evidence on the same ground that she's claiming here. Why wouldn't that be enough to exhaust? I mean, I agree that it would be different, perhaps, if the BIA dismissed, but the BIA did not. It affirmed, so it had to have reviewed something.
That's correct, Your Honor. One thing I want to clarify, the notice of appeal does not say there's evidence in this case that we don't think should be admitted. It says the error in evaluating all
the
evidence.
Sure, but, you know, that's a really uninteresting distinction. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is, suppose an ordinary trial, one of the parties objects on Daubert grounds to the introduction of certain evidence. And the judge, perhaps erroneously, allows the evidence in. Well, certainly the party can still argue, all right, you let it in, you shouldn't have let it in, it's terribly weak evidence. And because it's such weak evidence, it's admissible. We admit it's admissible, or we're not going to object to its admissibility, but that certainly allows you to argue that it's weak. So she can lose her Daubert-like ground, if, you know, since Daubert applies in immigration cases, but still argue that this fellow Epstein doesn't know Albanian, his evidence is self-contradictory, it's this silly stuff about diacritical marks, and therefore it's just not entitled to significant weight, even if it is admissible. So there's no contradiction there.
Understood, Your Honor. But still, in this case, the board is left to guess what the issues that...
If it was really left, it's Judge Rovner's question, Judge Wood. If it's really left to guess, then it should dismiss. I mean, that's what it says it's going to do.
No, Your Honor, right? It says it may dismiss. It's when
well,
it...
What is it? Of course it doesn't have
this,
to.
Right?
But if it, right. If it may dismiss, that means, just like with the adequate and independent state ground point, it may also choose to go ahead and decide the merits of the case if, as in this case, it seems to have been very plain by looking at the immigration judge's opinion what the complaints were about.
Well,
why should we second-guess the board in the choice of disposition it's made?
You're not second-guessing the board.
Certainly we are. You're telling us to treat a dismissal on the merits as though it wasn't a dismissal on the merits.
No, Your Honor. What the government is asking is that the petitioners be held to the same standard in appealing to the board that they would in this to this court.
No, you're saying that even if the board thinks that there's sufficient exhaustion for it to go forward, if the board, in a sense, has ascertained that it has jurisdiction, if you want to use that term, we should say, no, board, you were wrong. You didn't really have jurisdiction to reach the merits.
Your Honor, I'm out of time.
What if the board had discussed the merits at length? Would that alter your opinion?
Yes, Your Honor, it would alter our opinion. Perhaps if the board, you know, de novo said, well, we found these issues in this record not raised by the petitioner, but therefore we will address them anyway. They didn't do that in this case. They had nothing.
So that's the difference that it turns on, whether what they say?
You still
that's
have
a remarkable
to,
argument.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think
really
that would affect the exhaustion.
Now. You're really in trouble now.
I don't think that would affect the exhaustion argument, but I think it...
What do you mean it wouldn't affect the exhaustion? You just argued it would make a difference if the board said, all right, you didn't comply with our rules, we could dismiss summarily, but we're interested in your issues, and we're going to decide them on the merits. And you're saying if they do that, then we have jurisdiction.
No, Your Honor, I must have misunderstood the question. What I'm saying is that would make a difference. The board has that power to do that.
Yet we would not be able to review it?
No, Your Honor, you would not.
That's a remarkable argument. Remarkable argument. So here would be the board. it would go on. It would discuss all kinds of issues, substantive issues, and make all sorts of legal rulings. And we would not have jurisdiction to review it. So this is the way they could build up a body of law that was immunized from appellate from judicial review.
And I might add that's certainly not the way the exhaustion requirement works in the prison area, for example. If a prison board or if a state court decides to reach issues, then they've been reached and we can review them.
I'm out of time, Your Honor. Thank you.
You can respond.
Welcome to respond if you wish to do so.
Your Honor, I've spent a few years since I did any prison litigation, at least 10 years, so I'm not real familiar with it anymore after various. But the government sees your point, and perhaps if an exhaustion bar would be, if the board would address an issue, we don't want law out there where the board's not having it reviewed. And we would, in that case, we wouldn't be here right now if that would have happened. I will tell you that, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Potter. Mr. Heron, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
Thank you, Your Honors. I just want to get back briefly to this issue about the I-130 petition and why that issue isn't before the court or why that issue isn't being resolved. I want to emphasize that we did everything that we could within the time that we were allotted. We attempted to contact the government to obtain a remand. The government was not willing to agree. It was past the 90-day period for Ms. Pasha to file a motion to reopen by the time we were able to contact the government. And in addition, there is a fraud issue in this case. The immigration judge found that Ms. Pasha had submitted fraudulent documents. So the government may be taking the position that Ms. Pasha is not prima facie eligible anymore to adjust status, that she now would in fact need a fraud waiver. And so that's why another reason why it's important for this court to resolve this issue concerning the expert testimony in this case.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Heron and Mr. Potter.
Thank you very much.
The next case